the mainstream. Media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With an admission that would never be reported.
News. Hello, this is Julie Candler with the BBC News. The founder of the cryptocurrency exchange FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, has been sentenced to 25 years in jail in the United States for fraud and money laundering. He had earlier been found guilty of stealing billions of dollars from his customers in one of the biggest financial frauds in US history. Michelle Fleury reports.
A US judge has sentenced Sam Bankman-Fried to 25 years in prison for orchestrating what prosecutors have called one of the biggest financial frauds in American history. He has also been ordered to forfeit $11 billion, which will go towards compensating victims. Judge Lewis Kaplan said this was a very serious crime. It caps a meteoric rise and fall for crypto's former golden boy. After creating FTX, one of the world's biggest crypto trading platforms, he was convicted last November of 7 counts, including fraud and conspiracy. Mr. Bankman-Fried is expected to appeal his conviction.
Judges at the World Court have unanimously ordered Israel to take all necessary action to ensure basic food supplies reach the Palestinian population in Gaza. They said famine was taking hold in Gaza. Israel has denied that its military campaign aimed at Hamas is illegal. James Elder from the UN children's charity UNICEF said people in Gaza were living in fear for their lives.
They are so exhausted by this nightmare that they have said that they want it to be over and they want to be hit by a bomb. And the horrendous reality is that you hear things here all the time that you shouldn't normally hear, whether it's that or whether it's talking to a child who's lost their entire family. And yes, when the bombardments are intense, as they often are, when you lie in bed because there's no protection, so you lie there just waiting. And it does feel like a coffin. And you think of those children who've done that every single night for 5.5 months.
Russia has used its UN Security Council veto to block the renewal of an expert panel that monitors the enforcement of sanctions against North Korea. China abstained, while the remaining 13 countries voted in favour. The sanctions are designed to limit North Korea's nuclear and missile programmes. South Korea's representative called the Russian veto outrageous and accused Russia of blind self-centeredness. Hwang Jung-kook said Moscow had deliberately sought out excuses to veto the mandate renewal.
Russia employed an all too familiar and obvious tactic by insisting on completely unacceptable conditions without any room for compromise. Russia elicited objections which they gladly took as an excuse to veto. This is outrageous and makes no sense at all, given the continued and accelerated advancement of the North Korean nuclear and missile programs.
World News from the BBC. South Africa's Electoral Commission has ruled that the former President Jacob Zuma cannot stand in elections in May. Mr. Zuma, who used to lead the governing ANC, has joined a new party, MK, which nominated him to run. But the Electoral Commission said he did not qualify because he had a criminal record. In 2021, Mr. Zuma was given a 15-month prison term for contempt of court. Health officials say the number of cases of dengue fever across the Americas has trebled in the first 3 months of the year compared to the same period in 2023. Leonardo Rocha has the details.
The Pan American Health Organization, a UN agency that represents 35 countries, says that more than 3.5 million cases of dengue have been reported in the region. Over 1,000 people have died. The worst affected countries are Brazil, Argentina and Peru, which last month declared a national health emergency. Most cases of the mosquito-borne disease are mild, but it can cause debilitating muscle and joint pain and high temperature, which often require hospital treatment. Health experts say climate change and the El Niño phenomenon have created the ideal conditions for the spread of the dengue-transmitting mosquito.
Several countries are joining forces to send troops to France to bolster security at the Paris Olympics. The news was announced by Poland's defence minister after talks in Warsaw with France's top general. The Polish minister said there'd be sniffer dogs, while the main objective would be to detect explosives and prevent acts of terrorism. France raised its terror alert to the highest level after the Moscow concert hall attack. A study has found that English language song lyrics have become simpler and more repetitive over the past 40 years. The research has also found that songwriters have become much more self-obsessed, with words such as me or mine gaining popularity. And the study noted a decrease in positive, joyful lyrics over time. BBC News.
Hello everyone, this is Ankita Bharadwaj, your host for Subtle Desi Traits, and you are listening to WORT Madison 89.9 FM. So in the studio today, we have Sky Gia Garcia, and Sky is a singer, songwriter, and a freedom fighter. So Sky, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are you doing today?
Honestly, today has been wonderful. I went to work. I got off of work. I had a lovely dinner, and I'm here with you now. So
this sounds really amazing. I'm having a great day too.
Good.
So you told me, and your introduction says it, you are a singer and a songwriter. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so when I was 16 years old, I found out that I can sing. I was singing an Aerosmith song, and if anybody knows Aerosmith, then they know that the vocals for those songs are pretty difficult. And eventually, I started writing music as well, and what I came to realize was that it was a tool for me to process my emotions, difficult emotions, and for me to have an easier time moving on, really. So my music that I create, that I've been creating for the past 10 to 12 years, has a lot to do with the liberation of my soul.
That's interesting. I have been doing some of that work too. Liberation of the soul. I cannot write songs for the love of me. So, but when you talk about liberation of your soul, what does that mean to you?
It means freedom, freedom from the chains that bind me. And I think a lot about how my gift for music, my talent, has brought me into spaces that have granted me opportunities that improve the quality of my life and give me a platform where I'm able to spread this message of liberation of all oppressed people. So, you know, those ways I feel like it's been able to do that.
What places have you had the opportunity of spreading this light?
Well, I've performed plenty of places in my hometown of Rockford, Illinois. And then when I moved to Madison, actually, my first gig ever was at Cardinal Bar, which is gorgeous, beautiful bar. I love that place. And then I also had a performance at the Monona Terrace for a banquet that was put on by Outreach LGBTQ Community Center. And then I've been able to book different cafes in the area, and I'm looking to actually expand my booking this year and hopefully land some gigs in Chicago soon.
Have you ever gotten, you know, one of those fan compliments, you know?
Oh, yes, I was on the street once and somebody was like, aren't you that girl that sings the jazz music? And I was like, ah!
Oh my God, you should totally come to Coda for real though.
How did I forget? And I performed at Cafe Coda too.
Do it again so I can come.
I will. It is, you're right. Isn't that so lovely, that place?
That place reminds me, and I've said that multiple times, reminds me of New Orleans. And trust me, I've not been there. It's just been movies and, you know.
I've been told I need to go.
I've been told that too.
Yeah, we better get ourselves there.
Yeah. So far, you must have written a lot of songs, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite ones and what are they about?
I would think that some of my favorite songs. So there's one song in particular called Love Versus World. And that song is about the ways that human beings will commit themselves fully to a lie, and they will commit themselves to the illusion because it's more comfortable. instead of accepting that maybe something isn't working out best. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I love the meaning of that song so much is because even though we think that as humans, we think it'll be so painful to accept the truth, it actually, in my experience, has set me free so many times. So even in a breakup that I didn't want to happen, even though I was miserable in this relationship and I tried so hard to hold on to it, the moment that I just shattered the illusion was when my happiness just increased so much, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I have a friend who's going through that, mm-hmm. and I have myself gone through that, and it took me longer than I wanted it to take, and it was just not very helpful, taking such a long time to accept that fact that it was over, you know?
Yeah, I had to forgive myself. I've had to work on so much because I'm like, why didn't I leave sooner? And I'm like, the only sense that I can make out of it was that there wasn't a safe route for me to leave yet. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel safe enough to leave yet. And then also, I just needed to handle more. I needed to take on more of it until I had enough. And that was what it was for me.
Yeah, well, content warning, and you can stop me anytime you want. But I kind of resonate with that because I also, in one of my previous relationships, did not have a safe route. And it was not until I came to the U.S. that I was like, well, it's a different country now.
Yes.
So that was also liberating for me. So this song you're talking about, are there some of your favorite words or verses that you...
Yeah, it says, we can dance real slow while the house around us burns, and we can act like nothing's wrong, ignoring all that hurts. And we can sing our songs of joy, and we can go about our days. And we can lie to one another, singing love will find a way, but we both know that love ain't got no chance.
Oh my God. I mean, I'd want to do a 1 minute silence, but then we'll go off radio because that's how it works. Dead air and stuff, but okay, that sounds very poetic and very true and very, I can visualize it, you know?
Mm.
Kind of took me to one of my favorite songs these days, Flowers by Miley Cyrus.
Yes, I'm aware of that one.
Yeah, it talks about a burning of the house too, and so it took me right there.
Mm-hmm. I can see the visualization. I always see the couple dancing and the mm-hmm. house is just burning. It's like la la la, but we don't care.
Yeah, remember that one of the memes where there's this cartoon drinking some coffee or tea and the house around it is burning down? It's a very famous meme.
Yeah.
I don't know what that cartoon is, but it's very funny.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reality. I think that, you know, a lot of people are more comforted by just pretending like the house isn't on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Not me, though.
Yeah, I mean.
If the house is on fire, I either need to get out of it or I need to grab a fire extinguisher.
I need to learn how to use a fire extinguisher. Metaphorically and in real life. Oh, man. So have you had any opportunities to record your music and, you know, sell the records? I mean, anything like that?
I have had opportunities to record. I do not want to sell my music.
Hmm.
So I've been trying to figure out how I'm going to navigate, you know, hosting shows and making sure that they're free, making sure that they're accessible. It's very important to me that it doesn't become about profit. So yes, selling my music is not something that I've been too interested in, but I have been more interested in creating it. There's a band, actually. I recently got together with a drummer, a bassist, a guitarist, and Madison, all people who are local, and we're going to start creating some music as well to put out there and to organize some shows and whatnot.
But don't you think... maybe recording your music would reach to more people who might actually benefit from, you know, your words, like the words that you just told us about the, you know, trying to escape a very harmful relationship.
Yeah. You know? That's why I do want to record it. I do. But okay. I just don't want to sell it. And I don't know. I don't know how, you know, my team will feel about that.
That's fair. Because, yeah, there are other artists and their work in that. Mm-hmm. As well, and yeah,
so
I totally get that.
If I have to find out how to pay them in order to make sure that it's as free as it can be, that's a thing. But I don't have interest in accumulating much wealth when it comes to, I'd much rather it be dispersed in the community that I live in. And I've seen a lot of talented people, they've been able to utilize their gift to highly profit monetarily. And it's just, it's something that is tempting. So I have to be very conscious of.
I get that. For example, I do this work for free. I don't get paid for it. And I've been doing this for nearly 3 years, and I do not intend on stopping anytime soon, you know? So totally kind of get there. Your introduction says you're also a freedom fighter. Tell us more about that.
I believe that we would all be better off if we were independent from the city, from the state governments, from the national governments. So the work that I do is centered around dismantling these institutions and these systems that our current government is dependent on and runs off of. And I really do stand for the fall of the colonial empire so that we can live out the revolution that so many of us desperately need and are asking for.
What does, and I think it's going to be a very interesting answer. I'm already really excited. But what does revolution mean to you?
That is actually something that I'm doing a lot of research on right now. So I know personally, and this can be a very radical stance to take for some people and very normal for others, but armed struggle. There's also, though, I'm very adamant that our revolution looks like one that has not been documented in the past. I want there to be a lot of love within the experience of the people who are fighting back and standing up. I want those people to be taken care of. I want there to be a culture that acknowledges the violences that they are signing up to experience as a result of being on the front lines. And I haven't really seen many revolutions, any many wars that really incentivize this approach of incorporating as much healing as they possibly can within to the revolution. So that's something, it's going to be a struggle. You know, I don't want to change revolution from that because that is a core aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I do aim to implement, though, as much healing and easing of suffering within the revolution culture as we possibly can.
So I have been kind of in politics for a few years now, and I have often tried to analyze the stances the quote-unquote left takes and the stance the quote-unquote right takes, and weirdly, there are some of the stances that are very similar, and it freaked me out the first time I realized it was a thing, and that includes less government and less interference of government in our lives. Do you think your stance is different than the people on the right, and how?
No, I don't. I think that actually that that's one of the biggest illusions that the oppressor is able to convince us of, which is that our neighbors want something so drastically different from one another. I do think that when it comes down to it, majority of people actually want the same thing. But the ways in which our consciousness is manipulated and the ways in which we are turned against each other, if it's not about the color of our skin or our religion or what neighborhood we live in and the economic status, you know, all of those things are used to convince us that we don't want the same thing. But I'm not surprised by the research that you gathered to say that. And I can see why it was shocking too. It's like, oh.
I know. I mean, this is not the only stance I was like, okay. The other one is the right to own arms.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. I have seen so many radical leftist people wanting to have arms, you know? And so are the people on the right. And they're so similar in that regard, but we still have this division in the country, which, yeah, I wonder if people out there ever think about it.
Something I've found to be very interesting too is that people who actually identify on the left, there's also a large group of them who don't want to own arms,
yeah,
and who are very much for gun control. And for me, that is, you're one
me.
Of them.
I'm kind of I come from a country where we don't have arms as freely available as in the US. So I don't see a point, but I get that.
Yeah, and it's a topic that I'm continue. It's so fun as we continue to learn and grow and expand what our beliefs are. That's the process that I'm in right now when it comes to guns and when it comes to whether or not I feel how accessible they should be to the people and how vital they are to in revolution.
Yeah. Slowly and gradually, I'm understanding why certain people would like to have guns. But I feel like it's a vicious circle. You know, you get guns and then other people get guns. Now you're afraid of them, so you get more guns, and then on and on and on. It's a cycle, I feel like.
I don't know if you're familiar, but there's some beautiful tale of a person who was so afraid and they had built these castle walls around them to be so high, you know, and still inside of that castle, they felt so afraid, even with layers of guards and walls that nobody could climb over. And then they had this representation of somebody who was very exposed and open and was just sitting at a tree, and how that person was able to feel a level of security and safety without any of these precautions. I always try to aim to be more like that person. I have that stance on guns to where, like, I'm not sure how I would like to personally own one. I see like me owning one myself as not very necessary because it doesn't bring me a sense of security. But then the relationship in which, like, you know, the oppressive forces, they use weapons. They use these things. So there's a line from a really good song that says, I don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where I wish love would solve all of it. I wish it would. And I think that love is a piece of it, but it can't just be love.
I totally get that. With me, my problem, fear with guns is that I'm going to end up like Leonard from the Big Bang Theory and shoot my own foot, or be like the Lincoln lawyer in the first season, where he is so scared that he actually fires guns, like his gun, I don't know, on the wall and around, and he is so scared of it himself. He's the one doing it. So don't want to be either one of them.
That makes sense, 100%. I am looking forward, though, to, you know, I'm in Wisconsin. So I am going to visit a gun range and even just try shooting a gun for the first time, just to see, you know, what it's like. I never have. And I don't know. We'll see how that expands.
Well, I once went there to this one in Oregon or wherever, and it was very interesting, I'd say. Moving on to freedom fighting, to a different arena. I remember we met at the open, no, it wasn't a gala, it was some kind of a brunch event.
For the governor.
Yes, the governor. And I met you and you said, are you Ankita? I said, yes. And then you said you're from MCC. You've been exposed to the housing co-op structure in Madison. What got you there?
I was leaving a domestic violence relationship in Rockford, Illinois. And I said, I'm going to go somewhere to heal. So I thought to myself, Madison, Wisconsin has this utopia vibe, right? Like, it's all like sunshine and pretty rainbows.
Oh, Jesus.
They've made so much progress when it comes to racism, right?
Oh, my God.
Right? That's what I was thinking. So then I thought, well, how am I going to afford it? And the co-ops, that was the option. There was this culture of cooperatives that had very affordable housing. And I joined, the first co-op that I joined was International Co-op, which is part of MCC. And it was there that I heard of an election. They have a board, they have a president of an organization. And nobody was running. Huh. Nobody. And I thought to myself, okay, well, I should run. I have really great ideas. And I was under the impression that I had a body of 100 plus cooperative members who were dedicated to anti-racism.
Yeah.
And I was wrong.
Yes. Been there, done that.
So I won the presidency. And then healing did not happen.
Would it be
my
right
healing
to say,
was diverted.
Yeah, I was going to say that because I have also lived in the same co-op system, but you keep going on. Yeah.
Yes. So it started at International Co-op. It got to the point where I was so uncomfortable living there that I decided to move into Audre Lorde Co-op. And Audre Lorde Co-op had about only 4 members there. And the reason why this was so heartbreaking is because that co-op for a while had been known to be a designated zone for Black and brown people. So seeing the way in which this cooperative in particular was falling apart, seeing the way in which it was neglected and being forgotten about, it did not sit well with me. And it told me everything that I needed to know. So I got into that co-op and I started working with the people who were living there and we started building it back up. But I found so much resistance when I would call in racism as I saw it, white supremacy. And when I took the appropriate actions that I had the right to take within my position, people attempted and succeeded in punishing me for it. And to the point where I think that during my entire presidency at MCC, there was never a meeting of more than 25 people, perhaps. After I had taken radical action to hold people accountable for their racism, over 65 people showed up to a meeting to forcibly remove me from my position. So there's nothing that inspired the Madison Community Cooperative like a Black radical person holding white people accountable for their racism. That inspired them to get up and act. And then the next meeting, after I was removed, they didn't even have enough people for quorum. Those people cared. What did they care most about? Taking down a Black person. That's what inspired them to get up. But did it continue? No. Did they continue to show up to the meetings and stay involved? No. So it was very obvious to me what all of that was about. And I was so grateful. It's one of those situations where you're like, damn, I really wanted to stay and fight. But you know what? This may be for the best. This may be for the best for me that I get the heck out of here. So that's what I did. I ended up, I got actually a job opportunity. Mm. Someone reached out for me from Rockford. A new nonprofit had started. And I was like, this is perfect timing because let's go. And I left. And I always knew that I'm the type of person to where it's not finished until it's finished. So I'm going to keep talking about it when I can because I feel like when somebody has done me wrong, that's the last thing they want is to have more people get involved. But that's always been the best thing. Anytime I've experienced injustice, the more that I talk about it, the more transparent that I am, the more likely I am to receive what it is I deserve.
Yeah. By no means, I'm even close to what you do, by no means. But I used to live in the same system, MCC co-op, for 2016 to 2020, so like 4.5, 5 years-ish, right? I had at least 5 attempts to remove me from the co-op, but each time the lawyer in me was like, okay, show me the legal standing. And their own lawyer could not, because like, yeah, they do their chores, they pay their rent, they're not, you know, what you say is safe space violation is not really a safe space violation. So 5 times, and ultimately what they had to do, and that breaks my heart, is that the Phoenix House, which is now Zoe Bayless Co-op, they had to restart, quote unquote, restart and recolonize. That's the word they use in the policy. They kicked out every single person, which was mostly majority Black and brown people, in December 2020, in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of a, you know, race strife that we had, and in the middle of the winter.
Mm.
And they sold the house, if I'm not wrong, right?
They didn't sell it, but they definitely thought about selling it.
Oh, God.
And you are reminding me that when I first started at MCC, I missed you maybe by just a couple of months.
Oh, wow.
Because I interacted with some of the people who were still there. There were still about 2 people who just refused to leave. And
so proud of them.
Yeah, yeah. They did not go. They took everything to get them out of there. And you know something, what's very interesting about the whole, by the way, wait, first, thank you so much for sharing that. That is what I live for, those stories being told. So what I was thinking about was the ways in which Zoe Bayliss came about. Because after Phoenix was restarted, there was this move to say, let's take this property and name it Marsha P. Johnson.
Yeah,
and let's have it be for Black trans people and Black and brown people. And I'm sure everyone listening can guess that that idea was not very supported by the other cooperative members and also did not last and changed. So Zoe Bayliss was getting kicked out from the UW system and they needed a place. And MCC saw that that would be a profit for them and decided to move and allow Zoe Bayliss to occupy that space. And so that's where we have the fate of, what is it, 636 Langdon?
Yeah, 636 Langdon. Mm. Just so you know, everybody, I'll say that in, you know, again and again, these are just opinions and that's it. We're not trying to defame anybody. These are just opinions, and we live in a country with First Amendment. So here's that.
Yes.
I guess. Mm-hmm. You never know.
It's very good to point out that I'm speaking from my experience. And yes, these are my experiences, my opinions as a result of my experience.
Yep.
Yay.
So how did this experience with the housing co-op, you know what? Mm. The housing co-op industrial complex, let me go with that, affect the way you look at your freedom fighting role in the community?
Ooh, it actually impacted it in a very positive way. I inhabited a lot more tact. I learned mm-hmm. that as justified as I can feel in my emotions, and as much as those emotions can lead me to conviction, I need to make sure that when I am deciding to act, that it is the most appropriate time and that it is not just to sustain my false ego. Because I do think that there were times where I just felt that it was so urgent for an action to be taken that I exposed vulnerable parts of myself to people who took advantage of them. And that really is a learning lesson that I took from me that I'm able to use in battle today, and it really helps.
In my case, not anymore. I have been doing a lot of healing myself. It's been 4 years. But in my case, I kind of became a little bit paranoid because it felt like I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth that can be used against me. It could be as simple as my cat's name. I don't know. Something very simple, something very generic, and bam. Mm. You know, this is what was behind that thought, destruction.
The criminalization of our existence is one that we're able to relate to when it comes to our experience with MCC.
Yeah, I think that did teach me tact, like you said, and strategy, you know, and mm-hmm. also it really, I bring that with me to my current day job, and I'm really happy that I do the work that I do. I could have learned all of that without all the trauma.
Yep.
You know?
I hear you. Say that again. I could say I could have learned it without the trauma too. I would have preferred to learn it without the trauma. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the universe was like, you got 5 years and this is your crash course. We got no time. We got places to be, Ankita.
Seriously, it does feel that way. And if that's the case, then we have a really exciting future.
Yeah.
Ahead of us.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So what ongoing projects, when it comes to going back to your singing, besides trying to book more places, are you looking forward to?
I would say I'm really looking forward to the collaboration between band members and seeing the ways in which we are only going to create what organically comes. Mm. So we're spending a lot of time bonding and as a result, getting to know each other. And I'm really excited to see how that influences the type of music that we create.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really a big fan of when things just fit and when they feel right, you know, and I think that this is a group of people that it's going to happen with.
When it comes to your social, you know, fighting for the social causes, what is next? Are you going to run for office? Please say yes.
I actually was thinking that I am going to continue to work a program right now that is centered around youth homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to take any opportunities that I can to expand my experience working with the Madison community. The only office I've ever thought about running for is in my hometown for mayor one day or another.
Oh, that is so good. You mean Rockford?
Yes.
Well, I've heard some good things about Rockford.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like to see you run. And, you know, that would be really inspiring. I'm pretty sure for a lot of people, one of my coworkers used to live at Rockford and they are a white person, but they are white queer. And they tell me stories that, again, I could have done without in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I have a way of having a vested interest in taking up space within places where there is a mass amount of injustice and a mass amount of suffering. And to be honest with you, that's why I have so much business here in Madison, too.
That makes sense. So do you think... It's going to be very difficult to ask, and I'm pretty sure answer. Do you think that your experiences in Madison changed your positive view about our city?
Yes, in a way where it doesn't seem like it's only Madison. It helped me understand that this is the way that it is. Wherever there is this illusion of progress, like in the sense that so much progress has happened that now there's smaller amounts of the oppression or of the discrimination happening, but really it just is a little bit more coveted and a little bit more secretive. So it definitely did, and I feel that way about life. And I understand. Once upon a time, somebody told me when I was in my early 20s, because I'm 28 now, and when I was about 20, 21, they were like, you just wait. Life is going to beat that smile out of you. It's going to beat that hope out of you. And I promised myself, I was like, no, that's never going to happen for me. But then like 26 and 27 happened, and I was like, I'm a little bit more angry. And I remembered what that person said, and I was like, oh, okay, so that's the thing. I have to make sure that I stay on top of it and that I don't let the ways that I learn new things about the world make me lose hope and, you know, dim my light.
Yeah. I was told that I'm going to turn more conservative. Hasn't happened yet.
Woo! Thank goodness. They can't have you.
I hope not. But like, fun fact, long time ago, like six years ago, I was dating this person, and he identified more as a centrist. Mm-hmm. And then I agreed with some of the viewpoints he had, but not with all of them. And then towards the end of our relationship, he said, you turned me more Republican.
Oh,
I will never forget that.
My goodness.
I was like, at least one of us has turned Republican.
Did he say how?
No. I mean, he just said all the arguments that I presented.
Maybe it was your radical stances on things that he just felt like pushed him like even more back, which is his problem. You know, the ways in which we are positioned to coddle and to really not... to hold back like the passions that we have when we're discussing these types of things because of the ways that they will deter people. Mm-hmm. It's just not very fair. It puts so much labor, I feel, especially on women.
Oh, yeah, it totally does. And I learned a lot from that as well, how to communicate viewpoints without turning people into Republicans. For example.
Yeah, because we don't want...
You know what? Republicans should have hired me back then.
Yeah, there you go.
This person can create more Republicans. Pay her.
and I'm trying to remind folks, honestly, that our actions do actually have that ability sometimes to push people further into... the stances that they have that are not rooted in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that you said that it did teach you how to be more conscious of whether or not your actions are aligning with your goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that I learned too, is like, wow, If I just argue and argue and argue with someone, as satisfying as it can feel to know that I'm right and know that I'm saying, if this person isn't actually like receiving anything and we're not going anywhere, then I'm not really helping, and this is a waste of my time. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, so that's why I do not ever. I mean, I used to, but no longer start a debate on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I am bored. I could sleep, take a nap. You know, what a radical idea, I guess.
Yes.
So I just do that. Anyway, it was so great talking to you, Sky, and I feel like I could talk more and more.
Same here. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I think we should get coffee sometime.
Yes. And do you mind if I just plug some of my accounts, like my Instagram account?
Oh, yes. You can totally do that.
Anyone who's listening that wants to connect with me, my Instagram account is SkyBinary. That's SkyBinary. And then my name on Facebook is just Sky Gia Garcia, SkyGiaGarcia. Thanks so much, Ankita.
Of course. Well, we really cannot celebrate Women's Month on my show without some amazing Bollywood songs dedicated to women without objectifying and sexualizing our bodies. So today, I bring you some amazing songs that I grew up listening to, and I'm a big fan of them. And my first song today is Main Al Bailey from Zubeda, and it goes like, मैं अलबेली घूमू अकेली कोई पहेली हूँ मैं. Well, a little bit more about this song. If men, but not all of them, would have their way, women's lives would be stifled in neat little boxes. That's what somebody said on the internet about the song, and I totally agree with it. But when Javed Akhtar wrote about a woman in this song owning her identity, he wrote of the identity that a woman creates for herself. Society's expectations be damned. A.R. Rahman's music and Kavita Krishnamurti and Sukhvinder Singh's vocals perfectly complement the lyrics. I hope you love this song just as much as I do.
मैं अलबेली घूमू अकेली कोई पहेली हूँ मैं. हाँ, मैं अलबेली घूमू अकेली कोई पहेली हूँ मैं. पगली हवाएं मुझे जहाँ भी ले जाए इन हवाओं की सहेली हूँ मैं.
तुम्हारा गिली हो
कैसी बेताबियां मेरा दिल घबराता है मैं चाहे जाऊं जहां. घूमू
Well, the next song is called Jugni, and it's from the movie Queen. And it's about this woman, this Indian woman, who goes to her honeymoon by herself after her marriage doesn't pan out the way it is supposed to. And it's a beautiful movie about this woman who goes on a self-enlightening and self-finding journey. Like, it's amazing. You should all watch it. The film is every woman's modern-day fairy tale, honestly. Queen has also gifted us a song, which is Jugni, that spoke of breaking free from cages of patriarchal society. Amit Trivedi, who also composed the track, and the right mixture of excitement to Anvita Dutt's lyrics when he sang of becoming your own person and valuing your self-worth. You know, really important thing about the song, that it's sung by a man. So it's just all over really interesting. I hope you like that.
खिड़की तो खुली 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 तभी ऐसा लगे डरी रात है रात है रात है डरी 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 दबे 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 पैरों से वो चली कांच की घास पे घास पे काली सी डिब्बी में हुई वो कैद थी चंदा की मारी हमने गुलेल थी तारों की चाबी से खुली सफेद सी सुबह 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 जुगनी
All right, this song, the one that I'm going to play right now, is from the time when I used to be a teenager back home in India. And it's like by this girl band, which no longer exists. But, you know, at the time it was pretty hot and new and amazing and exciting. And it's called Viva. And the name of the song is Humne Geet Sunai. And honestly, this song is as relevant as it was before, reminding us to build a new world for ourselves as women. And it goes like, हमने गीत सुनाए हमने रंग दिखाए हमने रूप दिखाए तुम्हें. Well, I won't sing anymore. I want you guys to listen to the song on your own. So here we go.
हमने गीत सुनाए हमने रंग सजाए हमने रूप दिखाए तुम्हें. हमने दुनिया के वासी हमको नई फिक्र तरासी हमने नई बात बताए तुम्हें. हमने गीत सुनाए हमने रंग सजाए हमने रूप दिखाए तुम्हें. हमने दुनिया के वासी हमको नई फिक्र तरासी हमने नई बात बताए तुम्हें.
लहरा के
it for the show. You've been listening to Subtle Desi Traits, a monthly show right here on WORT Madison. I'm your host Ankita Bharadwaj. Coming up in a few minutes is Strictly Jazz Sounds, but first, the Insurgent Radio Kiosk.
झुमका गिरा दे झुमिला ले आ wake up to the 8 o'clock buzz to get the week started.
Now, we need the help of a good volunteer to run our on-air operations each Monday.
Sure, that means waking up a little earlier.
To get to the station around 7:30.
But that's why WORT has coffee.
So that you can start your week off right.
WORT is recruiting a volunteer to run the soundboard each week on Monday mornings from 7:30 to 9 a.m.
You'd run all on-air operations for our morning program, The 8 O'Clock Buzz with Brian Standing.
No experience is necessary, but a familiarity with computers and a strong sense of punctuality and reliability are preferred.
For details, call 608-256-2001 and ask to speak with Shali Pittman.
Or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out our volunteer application.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Budget Bicycle Center's used bicycle showroom located at 930 Regent Street. Open for curbside service estimates and sales, 251-1663. More information on Budget Bicycles services for new and used bicycles is available on the web at budgetbicycleCTR.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and ResTech Services, serving area businesses, nonprofits, and multi-dwelling properties with high-speed, net-neutral internet, digital phone, and television services. On the web at restechservices.net or by phone at 608-663-3868.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Thursday, March 28th.
This is Bird Note. Spring means woodpeckers carving out nest cavities. They're our most familiar bird carpenters. But they aren't the only excavators at work. Tiny nuthatches, which also have chisel-like bills, are exceptional wood carvers. They will chip out nests in wood as tough as utility poles. Some nuthatches coat their nest holes with sticky conifer resin. This may discourage predators or competitors, like squirrels and house wrens, from taking over the nest site. The nuthatches flit above the sap as they come and go. The resin deposited outside red cockaded woodpecker holes is thought to deter predators such as snakes. Very soft tapping may signal a chickadee at work. Even without a chisel for a bill, chickadees can still peck their way into less dense wood, like a knot hole or a decayed section of a trunk. Both males and females ferry out wood chips, creating a cylindrical cavity about 8 inches deep. Finally, the female alone adds a nesting layer of moss, lined with a softer material like fur, to make a soft and warm bed for eggs and nestlings. So listen this spring for bird carpenters, and watch for telltale showers of sawdust. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
The Madison chapter of the Hearing Loss Association of America will host a book discussion tonight at 6:30 at Penny Library. Learn about the many resources, both fiction and nonfiction, available in book format. Then join in the Hope Circle to hear each other's stories and find support. Meetings are open to everyone. That's a hearing loss book discussion tonight at 6:30 at Penny Library, 516 Cottage Grove Road. Tonight, from 5:30 to 7, a mindfulness and self-care workshop will teach skills to minimize the stress of everyday life. Workshop leader Nakira McCann is a mental health advocate and owner of Still Standing Enterprise. Tonight, McCann will show ways to care for yourself.